All right, and welcome everyone. It's Wednesday night's Cancel the Cabal on People's Internet Radio, and I'm Stephen Roberts. It seems my guest is a little bit MIA at the moment. I'm trying to have a friend of his that set him up. I'm trying to get a hold of him. I talked to my guest about 1 p.m. earlier this afternoon, and I'm not sure what's going on yet, so I just got a message from this other friend, so I'm going to put on another song and see what is going to happen here in just a little bit. Trying to get my guest. Enjoy the tune for just a few minutes here. All right, welcome back, everyone. I have not been able to find my original guest, so I'm going to continue on. When I can keep him on Skype, his Skype keeps dropping, or my Skype keeps dropping, one or the other. The call's dropped like 3-4 times now. I don't know what the problem is, but when I get him back after his cup of tea there he was making, me and Lee will discuss some things. I thought I would try to learn some things about what's going on over there, and maybe everybody can listen to some of my thoughts on what's happening over here. Do I have you back now, David? Or Lee, I'm sorry. Are you there, Lee?
I'm back in the room.
Your Skype has dropped like 4 times since you went and got your cup of tea there.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, the Skype on this machine. I'm on a different machine than this one.
Yeah.
Don't usually call in on it, but seemed to be okay before. But
yeah, well, it's as long as it doesn't drop very often, I guess we'll be okay.
I've closed a lot of pages, so I had a few pages open, so I'll just close a few.
I had originally lined up David Mauser. He is the founder of a company called Aristotle, or at least he helped fund it in the beginning. They are selling hemp oil, and I've been taking this for about, 3 months now, I think, since I had him on the first time in late May. I've been taking it solidly, and I've been seeing some pretty good things. I've dropped about 30 pounds. I don't know what it's attributed to or not, but I know I've lost a lot of fluid in my legs, lots and lots of fluid. My legs feel better, my knees feel better, and my feet and ankles. And I didn't do anything different, but just the hemp oil. All right, you're going to switch. Lee's going to switch PCs, everyone. He'll be right back here in just a few minutes. So maybe I'll just put another song in, and are you going to? Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Just going to play one more song until Lee can get back here. All right, welcome back, everyone. Unique Lee switched PCs there, and he's got a better signal, a better Skype or something. Better computer, maybe. I don't know what the deal is, but I got him back. Welcome back, Lee.
Yeah, we sprinkled some dust on it, and magically it worked. Well, I said it was magic.
Just magic. Anyways, what I was talking about was I've been taking this hemp oil product for about the last 3 months, and I think you might have missed it because it was your Skype was going in and out, and then you switched PCs. But I've been taking Aristotle. It's a hemp oil product. It's got the THCs taken out, and it's just the CBDs. Uh-huh. I think it's like 3 milligrams per tablet.
Yeah.
And I'm taking 3 tablets a day. And I've lost like 30 pounds in the last 3 months since I've been taking this stuff. I've lost a lot of fluid, lost a lot of water, a lot of fluid that was bottled up in my legs and my feet. They were swollen a lot.
So did you have like something like a lymphedema or something?
Well, I've got rheumatoid arthritis, and that creates a lot of fluid somehow. Or maybe it's just the things that I'm doing wrong that create a lot of fluid. But Jason wanted a link there in the chat room, and I sent it to him. And I don't know. I wonder if he's going to check it out. But I think a lot of people should check it out. They've only been getting – they have a free 7-day trial, and then you can buy a bottle after that and send it back if it's not working. And they've only been getting 10% of the bottles back. So things are looking good for them. Go ahead.
Well, I've always puzzled about why has the human body got something called an endocannabinoid system in the first place?
Yeah. I'm not even sure what you said there, but
Well, it's, in other words, in layman's terms, it's like having a letterbox built into your system and not expecting letters to come through it.
Okay, okay.
You've got cannabinoid receptors built into the entirety of your immune system, your endocrine system, but it's got a system all of its own called the endocannabinoid system. So my question to the experts is, why? Why is it there already built in for us not to take receptors in? You know, you got to put things in for it to receive.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Shade in, shade out, right?
Yeah.
That's
all
they say.
If there's a receptor for it, then obviously it's something needs to go in to, for it to be received.
Yes. Yes. Well, I know there's been a lot of companies here and in the last couple of years or so that are researching into this CBD of the hemp oil. And David's company, they had researched it for, I think, 18 or 19 months, he said. I spoke to him on Skype earlier today. I don't know what happened to him. So, anyways, they just came out in April, and things are looking good for them. Anyways, they're only getting 10% of the bottles returned to them. They were expecting to get anywhere between, I think he told me on the first show, he originally said it may or may not work for 1 in 3 people, and they're only getting 10% of the bottles back as a return on their money or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it. I can put my socks on a lot better now. They're not as tight.
Yeah.
I don't have to go out and buy gargantuan socks or shoes anymore because my shoes fit good too.
Does it just gather mainly in the bottom half of your torso?
No, I've been losing a lot of fluid everywhere, I think.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just throwing a little link into the chat room there. It was a cannabis study that was done from Canada in about 2008 or 2009.
Uh-huh.
And what they did was they amalgamated all the studies and done one overall larger study. And that link there is basically all the conclusions from those reports. And some of the findings that they have are very interesting.
Oh, looks like there's a video on there, huh?
It's just a presentation. It's one of those interactive ones. But if you go through the slides, it's kind of like a two-faced Janus kind of perspective. It's from the World Health Organization and the United Nations system. They usually focus on the negative aspects of it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't trust anything the WHO would put out.
No, but that's why I've done it in that way. I put all the negative stuff first from the so-called voices of authority, and then I put in just the report conclusions, what they find, and it just dispels all of them. Every single one of them.
What does it have to, well, you've already gone through this is this your presentation here?
Yeah, I done this years ago. Oh. I was trying to give people just a bit more clarification on what cannabis does and what it doesn't.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the slideshow, you'll see that all the conclusions and the recommendations is yes, you know, this should be used more often because of the causative agents of it being anti-emetic, you know, anti-vomit, anti so many things, but, you know, they still dispel it as, well, it'll make you nuts.
Let's go ahead.
Very extreme cases.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about this presentation if you'd like.
Yeah. It's there to be shared, helped, you know, do what you want with it.
Yeah.
It's just the raw information, you know, make of it what you will.
Yeah.
that's my ethos. Make of it what you will.
Yeah. Well, I can put it up on my video screen too. My video presentation.
Mi casa es su casa.
Yeah. A little bit of Spanish there.
The good thing is I've got other stuff on. I think you've seen the slide share, and that's getting shared and embedded. So, yeah, feel free. Make it available. If it helps the awareness of how good cannabis stroke hemp is and how we should get more of that into the circulation and more of the bad stuff out of the pharmacotics, I'm all for it.
Sure, absolutely. I am too. Anything that can keep me away from the drugstore, I'll go out and get roots and berries and nuts and twigs if I need.
Well, let's face it, the narcotic system is not putting any of that revenue back into the infrastructure for which it provides.
Well, it's just funding more research to find more poisons for us. That's all it's doing.
Well, there's a question for you from an American point of view. What do you think Obama's actually trying to do with this this bill? This, what is it, the Obama Care bill or whatever it's called.
Obamacare?
Obamacare, yeah. What exactly is he trying to do from your perspective?
Well, the ultimate goal, I mean, the conspiracy is, Lee, the ultimate goal is to call the population down from 7.3 billion down to a minimum of 2 billion within the next I think 15 to 20 years. And they're going to have to do that some way. If, well, many of us remember back in 2008 on his campaign, and it's still out there on YouTube, somebody asked him about Obamacare, and he said, well, you know, Granny and Gramps is getting a little old, so it's kind of not too feasible to treat them, so we'll just give them a painkiller and send them home, you know. And I believe that's basically what they're going to start doing, is they're going to start picking and choosing who's going to live and who's going to die with the death panels.
Well, funny enough, you should say that. What's just happened over here in England is David Cameron's just given the idea that the first thing that an old person's going to get when they walk into the, you know, National Harm Service is, well, how would you like to die?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, well, is that really the first question you want to be asking these frail old people who've basically built everything that you have?
Yes.
You know, and that's how you treat them.
Yes.
So, yeah, we see parallels. I mean, I watch America very specifically because what happens there is mirrored over here.
Yeah. You know what you just reminded me of? An old movie, I think back in the 60s. seems like it was Soylent Green.
Soylent Green, yeah. Yeah.
The old guy
that was in the library.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the one that went to the library, and the one that was kind of like a lawyer or something or whatever.
The one who went to his the end of life care.
Yeah, the end of the life care. How do you want to die today? Well, I would like this. I'd like this nice, serene little open pasture scene and some kind of classical music or whatever it was. And I think he ordered a bottle of wine or something, or sherry, or I don't know what it was, but. They give him his injection, and he had like 20 minutes. He said he wanted 20 minutes. And, yeah, I just wonder if that's what it's going to come down to. Soylent Green type of, scenario.
I think that screen, you know, with the pastures and the sea, I think that'll be replaced by Kim Kardashian's arse or Miley Cyrus twerking.
Do you think so? Oh, goodness. Well, I don't think I'll go to the death moratorium just quite soon.
I should really be a futuristic writer. I've got really dark analogies for all the things I see.
That's quite macabre. There he is. Well, you do have a profile picture of King Leonidas with a Che Guevara beret on, don't you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a synthesis, shall we say, of two ideas.
Yeah,
and it counteracts itself.
It does, doesn't it?
It's more of a neutral figure than anything else. It's funny that people say, "Oh, it's Che Guevara." I'm like, "Well, not really. It's more like a yin yang neutralizing if you like."
That's what I thought when that's what I actually thought when I first seen it, because it was so small on the it was the MSI room back then, but. You know, some of the pictures are quite small, and you can't hardly tell what it was. And I think I messaged you and asked you, what is that, Che Guevara?
But I liked it because it's that scene from the movie 300, and I just love it. It's when Leonidas meets the giant Xerxes, which again people miss in that movie. He's a giant.
Yes, he is. Yeah,
very subtle.
He's like 11 foot tall or something like that, or 12,
and he comes in on the bull of, you know, the Taurian bulls of the age of Taurus, and I'm like, well, there's another subtle hint for you.
Yeah, a nice little hint there, huh?
Yeah, but it was the speech when he says to him, you know, when Xerxes says the world will not remember your name or something like that, and he says to him, no, the world will know the few stood against many. The free men stood against a tyrant, and before this war was over, that even a god king can bleed.
That's right. That's right.
And I was like, I love that. Yeah. That's sticking.
That's right. Have you seen the second movie yet? Rise of
Empire? Not yet. My girlfriend refuses to watch it.
Refuses to watch it?
Yeah, she doesn't like Greek history or Athenian history being
played out.
She doesn't like it inaccurate, so it annoys her, so she won't watch it.
I've seen it. It's a darn good movie. I mean, it's a lot more fighting scenes in there, but I don't know. It's a good movie overall.
I like the first one, 300. I just like the just some of the things in it. You know, showing you the true matriarchy with his wife before he kicks the guy down the well.
Yeah.
He looks to her for consent.
Oh, did he? I never.
Have you not noticed? He looks back and she gives the wink.
I never noticed that. No. Nope.
Well, she controls the men, as he says, you know, the women birth the warrior.
Yeah.
So,
well, there was, I believe there was a time, correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe somebody in the chat can correct me if I'm wrong, where the women did rule the roost.
Mm.
Every woman. Not just in the aristocracy.
There's a wonderful book. I don't know whether you've read it or investigated it, but it's called Ancient Eugenics.
No, I don't know that one.
I think the author's Rolly or Rolf or something like that, but he traces the idea of eugenics all the way back to Sparta.
Oh, well, certainly. That makes sense. They wanted to keep track of all of their common people way back then.
Yeah, they were very selective with their breeding. Again, you get the idea of these children being, you know, thrown away and cast off because they were weak.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
that's where they're getting it from.
Yes.
He also describes the idea that when they finally conquered Athens, even the Athenian Senate admired the Spartans and their genetics, you know, the eugenic program, and actually thought, we'd bring that in, we'll implement it. So they actually worshipped their conquerors in a weird Stockholm Syndrome kind of way.
Right.
Because they realized that because it was governed by three kings or a certain system of regional kings, it worked better.
Sure.
Just a very interesting book. It's a couple of hundred or so pages, but it's interesting because when you look at our modern eugenics and then you track it back, you think, hello, I've seen this before.
Well, it's all the same families running the show. Just their inbreeding, their incestual ways are dementing their brains and making it worse and worse.
Yeah. Not many people factor that in, though, do they?
Well, you just can't marry your, you just can't have offspring with cousins and stuff like that and not have ramifications. They claim that you can, but it just doesn't really work.
It's a strange belief system. Anyway, I've always challenged it right from the beginning anyway. Where does that idea come from?
Keeping it in the family, you mean? Incestual?
Yeah, incestual relationship. Where does that idea even formulate in history?
Probably way back in Athenian and Spartan times, or maybe even further back than then. I have this feeling that once our modern, are you okay there?
Yeah, sorry, I was just
okay. Readjusting. That's all right. No, I've often thought here. Once we put our modern monetary system, however far back it goes, thousands and thousands of years, they've been using gold and silver for money for forever, just about.
Yeah.
As far as modern history. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what was your question again? Oh, the incest.
The incest. Yeah.
Yeah. Incest. Well, the bright shiny trinkets. They twinkle in their eyes, you know, and they have an effect on people. And people that do have this brain disease of incest or I know there's a better word for it, but inbreeding. Mm. They have a demented brain, and they want to keep all of these shiny little trinkets in the family, and that's what they've been trying to do for thousands of years, as far as I can see, Lee.
The thing is, it completely goes against what we would deem natural, isn't it?
Well, you can't. Well, I guess maybe they have the mindset that you can't trust outside your family. But yeah, you are right, though.
I mean, I try and just look from a point of view. Let's go back 6,000 years to 6,000 BC. What have we got there that tells us anything? Not much.
No, we had kings and we had rulers that were, well, like you mentioned, throwing babies off the. Mm-hmm. Off the edge of cliffs or down into volcanoes or shoving a knife in their heart.
Yeah.
Whatever so the sacrifice happened to be.
So my question's always been to the Gaia worshippers, you know, the spirits of light or whatever group they call themselves. Where's this idea of naturalness in history? Because he said we all spoke in one language, we all talk to the animals. I'm like, well, where is that historically in our chronology, and when did we lose it? Because we've gone completely upside down since then, because all we do from like 3000 BC onwards is murder everyone.
Yeah.
So what's causing that?
Huh.
I've always looked at the origins of war. Where's the origin of war come from, and how far ago was it? Now, how far back can we go before we see the first traces of a so-called war?
That probably comes from greed. One ruler sees another ruler's land, and he gets greedy. And whether he creates a false flag attack like Caesar did, you know, on his own land. Blames it on another force or another group, another tribe or whatever. They get greedy. They want land. Just as much as they have, it's still never enough. It just still doesn't seem to be ever enough.
Well, it's never enough, isn't it? As the old song goes. But it's funny, I mean, I should ask you this question. When I first started out on this, I started out with one question. Where did the warfare come from?
Where did the warfare come from?
That was my first question for my quest about, I don't know, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
What was your first question to set you off that you thought, well, what did that happen there, or why did that happen? Anything that started you off?
Well, yeah, I kind of wondered where the deception started myself. Not so much the war, because people are basically ignorant. I mean, those of us not on PIR, of course, are basically ignorant people. And the way Mark Passio says it, they are ignorant. They are ignorant. They are ignoring true factual materials, true factual research. And there you get into the psychological term of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
People are so conditioned in their beliefs that they will just disregard the truth no matter what, right in front of their face.
Yeah.
And they will fight you for it too. Fight you to keep their belief.
It's a bit like when you could point out to someone, again, it's the farcical nature of what Cameron's doing with the Kurds.
Right.
I think I mentioned it the other day, and I'm thinking, hang on a minute. This guy's publicly admitted he's a Christian, and we're all a Christian, with a Christian identity or a Christian character. He goes to the Church of England regularly, and yet he's there espousing to the people it's perfectly okay to arm the Kurds against ISIS. But yet, if you look at the definition of terrorism, he would fit that perfectly.
Oh, sure, certainly.
Absolutely, it would fit him like a glove, and yet he's not. And you tell that to people, and they go,
So would Israel, and so would the American government.
Yeah, that's how blatantly obvious it is. But you tell that to people and they go, oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, like, no, you're just a commie. You're just a commie. That's all you are.
Yeah.
You don't love your country, right?
Yeah, yeah. The United Kingdom isn't a corporation. No. So that definition in the terrorism, when it says any organization that puts fear in public, you know, and threatens the public, any organization that the United Kingdom isn't a corporation. So they're not harassing you. So it's all makey uppy fairyland stuff.
That's right. Corporation can't be held accountable, can it? Just individuals.
No. So that's what I find hypocritical about a lot of things in this country. I call them consciously ignorant. Because they know what's going on, but they just choose to consciously ignore it.
Well, sure. Consciously. That's what I happen to mention. They are ignoring. Ignorant really never was meant to be a bad word, but ignorance, that is a bad word.
There's another thing I thought was very interesting there. When you look at the Olympics, they're all basically warfare enactments, of them,
yeah,
historically.
Yes, they are.
And yet today, it's beautified into a way where you have pretty athletes who run a few races, get a few medals, suddenly have a career, and then become perfumeries and, you know, fashion designers. I'm like,
yes.
What's happened to that?
Advertising.
That's just become a commercial joke.
Yes, it is. Nothing but a joke. Well, there really isn't a lot of money in the Olympic sports, so they pretty much have to go into advertising or little TV spots or something like that.
Well, let's face it, it was losing so much credibility with the amount of drug taking, because I think the Olympics is just the world drug trials, really, isn't it? You know, if you can get away with it, you'll be the fastest man on the planet.
Well, maybe the Tour de France is. I'm not sure about the Olympics.
He came out with a cracker as well. He said, I'm just more miffed that I had to tell the truth. You know, I wish I never had to tell the truth. I'm like, well, you're a good guy, aren't you?
Are you talking about Armstrong?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because he got busted, you know, if I hadn't got busted, you know, they got away with it.
Yeah. Well, he did lie for how many years?
Even up to the bitter end, he's like, no.
Yeah.
No, 14
or 15. 14 or 15 years or something like that. He lied. Yeah.
But this is the bottom end. I mean, when we start looking at Mark Passio stuff with the micro and the macro, these are just the micro level of what the macro level's doing. Even these lowly sports stars, they're so psychopathic that they actually believe the nonsense they speak about.
Yeah, sure they do.
And expect us to believe it.
Sure they do.
No, I didn't throw that Molotov cocktail through the window. Even though I was caught on camera doing it, it wasn't me.
Right. Right. Sure. They're, They're all prima donnas, just like the politicians and the movie stars are.
I mean, narcissism is a really strange thing for me, but when you think of the Olympics, there's another book called The Ancient Olympics by Nigel Spivey. And when you read that, the Olympics themselves were created right from the beginning under goddess worship. It was only later it became Zeus worship, which they don't quite know why. But originally, right from the beginning, and they still don't know the origins of it, but they say the earliest references is to Hera, the goddess of war.
Uh-huh.
So it was a female, it was the matriarchy that was there first. It was only later that they made it a patriarchal thing with Zeus, the thunderbolt god.
Hmm.
But yeah, they flipped it, as Vin would call it, the switcheroo.
Yes. I've got, a 4K Karis made a pretty interesting comment there. Olympic Games equals Hunger Games, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I haven't even seen the Hunger Games movies, so I'm not even totally positive what the concept of it is.
If I could kind of make a really quick description of it, it would be kind of like, have you read Brave New World?
Have I read it?
Yeah.
I've got it, but I haven't read it yet.
Well, if you read Brave New World Revisited.
Okay.
The Hunger Games themselves are like the ones who are the elite class, shall we say.
Yeah.
The ones who have been pre-programmed from birth to just fit into the status quo and be happy with your slavery.
Yeah.
All the lower class ones are the ones who live outside like savages.
Yeah.
So they would be the ones who are sacrificed in the Hunger Games system.
I wonder if these aristocratic people just sit around and talk to themselves and ask the question, why can't these common people just adore us? Why can't they just adule us, you know? We're the chosen ones. We have this special blood in us, and this special royal blood, allegedly. And why can't the common people just be common?
You saw that in the movie Gladiator with the guy.
Gladiator. Which one was that? Was that Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe and Joaquin Phoenix, the one who plays the
the king.
The Well, when he says to her, "Why don't they love me?"
Yeah.
Isn't it? Why don't they love me?
Yeah.
You love me, sister, don't you? You know, showing that old incestual side. But
yeah.
It's the narcissism thing.
Yes,
it's always there.
It is.
But the media's breeding millions of them.
Yeah.
Every day I'm looking in the media thinking, oh my God, these people are turning into Disney dolls, and they're just losing sight of all reality.
Yeah. Well, look at this. Have you seen this water challenge going around on?
Yeah. And another, well, they call them crazes, don't they?
Yeah.
Because people are crazy.
A craze or a Something that goes viral.
Viral is another word, yeah.
Yeah. And one of my Facebook friends asked today why this water challenge is even going around. And I wrote back to her because people are basically stupid and they don't have lives. They want to become famous on the internet and they don't know how to do anything worth a damn. So they just pick and do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Like these little dances or... get a life. If you don't really have a life, get one. Turn your TV off and use your brain.
I sometimes feel like being ridiculously, sardonic and will something to happen, like, you know, get someone to just douse themselves in petrol and do the fire challenge.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
yes,
that's how stupid these people are, that they mimic everything they see, like monkeys.
Yep.
They really do. And I'm sorry to say that live on radio, but... You just see these people and like, are you just a singing, dancing monkey like every other one on this planet who looks the same as everyone else and wants to be the same as everyone else?
Of course they are.
Do you do anything individual for yourselves?
Well,
anything?
It goes back to, David, they don't have a life and they want to do something. You know, some of these people that have been caught mass murdering people, like in a school or something, they've been asked why they did it, and they said that their life is so miserable that they wanted to be remembered for something. And whether it was a mass murder, it didn't really matter. They're remembered.
Yeah. Again, it's a strange mindset, that, isn't it?
Well, society makes it that way, Lee. We see these images. They more or less tell us what beauty is. And beauty for a woman has to be a size 2.
Yeah.
Do you have sizes like that over there? Over here in America, a size 2 would be like a skeleton with skin on it.
Like a size 8 over here.
A size 8, a nice size woman.
The thing is, in England, women get so absorbed with themselves. And I have this conversation with my girlfriend, and it's interesting the insight that she gives me, because do you know why women dress so flamboyantly?
For
guess,
each other.
Guess who it's primarily for?
For each other.
Peacock. Yeah, they for peacock each for each other.
Yep.
And I call it peacock.
It's that way over here, reason. Too. They get all the makeup on for each other.
It's funny because we talk about the boob jobs, that everyone seems to have boob jobs and they get their self-confidence. I'm like, well, that's a narcissistic thing to do on one level. I can see it from one point of view that you may be self-conscious, but on the other level, there's so many of them doing it because all of a sudden they can do fashion modeling and they can suddenly go to these gala events and
go to the
beach. Look pretty. And it's like, well, that's not changing society though, because you're still getting the walls circling you.
Yeah. Put a bikini on or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You feel like saying, well, when the wolves surround the camp, you're going to be the prime fodder because you're stupid. you'll be led off to the other camp.
That's right.
To serve another need. Yeah.
Well,
they don't get that.
Yeah. I keep saying it a lot though, Lee. If the cosmetic industry went away tomorrow, it would take us men about a half a second to get over it.
You could be really evil and say women actually are causing the toxification of the water supply with all their chemicals.
Yeah, but you don't want to do that, though.
But I won't.
You don't want to do that, though.
I love the feminists all over me. But men don't wear that much lipstick or eyeliner to really factor into to that side of things. But again, you know,
well,
we're all making mistakes, aren't we?
they do have that beauty care for men, though.
Of course they do. Yeah. Yes. Again, it's just an ironic thing that we've got to the point now where people are actually trying to look like plastic dolls.
Oh, they are. Yeah. You're talking about the human dolls here lately, huh?
Yeah. That's worrying to me, though.
Yeah.
I mean, as an expression of mankind, if there was a great creator or whatever it is up there watching guiding, he must be, it must be thinking, what the hell have I done? How did that happen?
Yeah, exactly.
Evolution wasn't meant to take it there. But then again, we're not really in natural evolution, are we? I've said to my girlfriend, she clings on to Darwinian theory. I'm like, it can't hold true because natural selection and natural things do require what it means, natural. When you're in a socially engineered, laboratory-conditioned experiment where everything's controlled and everything's guided and your thoughts aren't yours and all the language associations aren't yours either, how the hell is this natural?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm just thinking logic and reason, like we all promote on people's internet radio. How can it be a natural selection and natural evolution and bind to Darwin's principles when everything is unnatural?
So true.
Including legislation, it's all unnatural law, isn't it? Because it's written by so-called humans.
Yes, so-called humans.
So it's flawed already.
So-called humans.
Yeah, that was the biggest switcheroo when we went from natural to unnatural.
Well, I think that conspiracy goes back forever also. They've had this, you know, I think it's always been throughout history. They just tax the little man, take out the people that are dissenters. I know China, I think in the late 40s when Mao Zedong took over, he started killing professors, teachers. He even started killing people that wore glasses. Because allegedly it was thought that someone that wore glasses might be smarter than the average little Chinese rice farmer.
Chinese rice farmer.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned Mao Zedong, and then you kind of cut out there, so I guess you must have missed that.
I've read Mao Zedong.
Yeah.
Who's the other one as well? The Art of War. Cao.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I think so.
Yeah. That's an interesting book to read. The Art of War.
Yeah. Well, when I mentioned there, I think when you started to cut out there, Lee, that Mao, he first went after the dissenters, and then he went after the university professors and the teachers.
Yep.
The smart people. And then he started killing people that wore glasses because...
Yeah. Intellectuals.
Allegedly, people that were smart wore glasses because they read a lot.
Yep.
And...
That's a threat, isn't it, to have intellectuals?
It's a threat. It's a threat. An intellectual is a threat to a tyrant. Somebody that can think is a threat to a tyrant.
It's this whole idea of knowledge and wisdom, isn't it? You've got these fellows who, I mean, as a basic analogy, you could say, well, one guy who has one book is never going to be as knowledgeable as a guy with five books.
Not necessarily true, but, you know.
Academically, you would say on paper, well, he's had 5 books to read, so he'll have a bit more knowledge to work out a few more ideas in his head, as opposed to this guy who's got the one book, like maybe the Bible or the Quran.
Right.
But people think, well, that one book is all knowledge. I'm like, well, it is and it isn't. You know, you've got to search around for the knowledge to put into context for you to work it out.
Yes, you do.
But we haven't got all the pieces, have we? We got a big missing jigsaw puzzle.
No. I was on a program last night. We were just talking about this knowledge. You know, I think somebody said, well, one of the guys last night on the show I was on, I got asked to do a show. He said that the books underneath the Vatican go for 5 miles, long. Don't know how wide it is or whatever, but that's a lot of books. And who's to say that they don't have, that these people, these elite people that are in charge, don't have 10 times that many books that are hidden away that nobody knows about?
The way I used to look at it is, there's a little background story. Got talking to an occult friend of mine who was a 96 degree Mizraim Rite Freemason. He was also part of the OTO. And he was also a Knight of the Pendragon in England. And me and him got chatting about DNA and sight and what we can see and what we can't see and all the things to do with genetics. And what we kind of agreed on was we as human beings only see 3% of light. The other 97% is occult. In other words, dark. We can't see it. It's out of our peripheral range. And not to go into David Icke mode, but we've only got a very limited perception of light from the Lord of Light.
Absolutely.
And we've kind of agreed that 97% of this wisdom and knowledge is locked away under lock and key. So we've only really got 3% of wisdom and knowledge on the face of the earth that we can actually deal with. We've got 97% of it missing. And we all sit there with this 3% of knowledge going, I've got the truth. I've got the full picture. No, I've got the absolute truth. Here's all my research. And we're like, yeah, but it's only 3% of it. We're clutching at straws trying to get this bigger picture, and there's 97% missing, and we're not seeing it. Would that be fair as an analogy? Why we're so blinded to most of this stuff?
Sure, absolutely. But, you know, the knowledge that is available to us out there is enough anyways, I think. You know, there's...
I would say yes, because if you look at the fractal stuff, it's a small mirror image of the whole, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So we must be close between all of us. I think if we put all of our ideas into one big interlaced mesh, I guarantee you that those 100 trace pieces of paper, if they all lined up, they'd all have a similar skeleton to them. We just argue about the finer details, like where did they come from? You know, what happened here?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned David Icke there a minute ago, Lee. I've listened to a lot of his stuff.
Me too.
I like a lot of his material, but some of his other material is just out there, and it's you know, it's just, I'm not saying that it's not true, and I don't believe it. It's just you know, I might need to have a little more truth or a little more proof.
Yeah,
than just somebody saying something, but I don't know. He did say one time that to get back on a monetary system. I think when the Spanish first come to the New World here, they started to learn the Indian language, the indigenous people here, and asked them where the store was, where they bought things, and they didn't really have a word for buy. The Indians didn't. This is what David said.
Yeah,
and they didn't really understand the concept of buy. You know, they asked the Spaniard, how do you buy something that grows out of the ground? A tree or a berry or a fruit.
Yeah.
How do you buy something that God gives you already?
Yeah.
And they also, ironically, they didn't have a word for prison either.
I just find it even more interesting that, you know, the Westerner or the so-called European would say, oh, he's just an ignorant savage.
Right.
It's like, no, they just don't understand the concept of this money stuff that you want to throw onto them.
Exactly.
to indebt them.
They don't understand what slavery means.
No.
That's what that is. Well,
I mean, sometimes I actually think sometimes on a higher level that money is actually a contraption of an of an external force.
It was the invention
imprisoning another race.
Yes, it was.
The most stealthiest way to capture an entire planet is to give them this device called money.
Oh, yeah.
Self-entrap themselves.
Yep. There's no doubt about that. It was invented to enslave humanity.
Oh, yeah. But I don't think it's a man-made thing.
No?
I think that's come from somewhere else. It's like an import or an export from somewhere else, because it's not our idea.
Extraterrestrial, maybe?
Well, I always like to call it non-terrestrial. How about Mars?
Yeah.
How about the Moon? I mean, they're close by bodies. I'm quite open to the idea of Mars having a problem in a very long time ago and all exodusing from there and heading here. Why not?
That conspiracy is out there.
It's plausible to me.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at the time frames and everything's coming from heaven. It's coming down from heaven. I'm like, well, the only thing that's close to heaven is the Moon and Mars.
Right.
So, why not? I don't struggle with it, especially when you start seeing geometry up there that looks reminiscent to what we've got down here. I'm like, well, as above, so below. Okay, why not? We've got more links to Mars than most things. We've got Martian law, haven't we? Sorry, martial law. Everything's red. They worship the war gods. Where's all that coming from?
Yes, exactly.
Is that really our symbolism? Is this really our religions? Are they all imports to self-enslave you?
Yeah.
Or as a stealth way to make people captives?
Yeah.
Or run them, I don't know, Earth Inc.
Yeah.
You know, one big production company that's monitored like a mining outpost says, you know,
there's also,
how's Earth doing?
Yeah.
You know, well, output's going down because the people are rebelling. Well, best send someone down there and sort them out.
Yeah. There's also the conspiracy out there, too, that there is a atmosphere on both Mars and the Moon.
Mars wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, they put a red filter on it. It's actually a blue planet.
If you look
at the very first pictures of the rover when it went up, the pictures were all blue-red mm-hmm. haze.
Right.
So it's got an atmosphere.
And they put filters on the when they take pictures of the Moon, too, to make it look white.
But the Moon's a bit of an enigma, though, isn't it? Let's face it. It's 10% titanium the last time I looked. So where's the titanium coming from?
Well.
that's an alloy.
I know. It is. Like
let's
a hollow,
maybe? Let's not deal with that.
Like a hollow, maybe?
Yeah. Let's not deal with how alloys are made.
It's a man-made object.
It's funny, David, I came up with this stuff years ago because I've got a friend called John Collins on Skype, and me and him were chatting about this stuff years ago before David Icke.
Yeah.
You know, the light spectrum, what the Moon does, you know, does it give off a certain frequency of light if it's got a certain frequency rebounding off it? And we got into the Moon. I was like, well, there's a book called Who Built the Moon?
Yes.
Have you read that one?
Wasn't that by a couple of Russian authors?
No, that was Christopher Lomas and Knight, and they were ex-Freemasons.
Okay. No, I haven't read that one yet.
No. Well, they go through the math of how the Moon is where it is and the mathematics behind it.
Yes.
And then there's another book.
It doesn't spin either.
Well, the math is just so perfect. You just think to yourself, how the hell does that naturally occur?
Right, but the Moon doesn't spin also, though.
It doesn't spin, though, so it's in geosynchronous orbit in space.
Like it's being held there.
Yeah, so that made me think a lot. I'm like, well, that's perfectly placed, and it does a perfectly circular orbit. All the rest of the planets do ellipses. And it's only Pluto that goes on an axial tilt that's the wrong way.
Yes. All the other planets spin and all the other moons spin, except for our Moon.
Yeah. And then you think to yourself, well, okay, there's another book called Our Mysterious Spaceship Moon by Don Wilson.
Right.
And there was loads of quotes there from the Russians that you mentioned, Vasily and someone else. But he reckoned that the Moon is armor-plated to 25 kilometers of titanium alloy.
Yeah, and the rest of it's hollow on the inside.
Yeah, he reckons that all the when the holes are filled in, it's actually pumped. I think it's a titanium cement that's pumped from the inside out.
Yeah. Also, I believe the Moon doesn't weigh as much as it should.
No.
Isn't it?
No, it's actually too big to be an orbital satellite compared to other moons in the solar system.
Right,
they're usually tiny.
Sure.
But this one has a certain mathematical proportion, which is unnatural. Everything points to it being an artificial object, basically.
Yes, it does.
And it rung like a bell, which means that it's metallic. So that fits with the Vasily stuff when he said it's a 25-kilometer thick armor-plated ship. Also fits in with a lot of other stuff. I mean, I've got a thing on my AuthorStream account, if you want to have a look at it. It's basically a perspective of an ancient war where these moons were actually ships. There's one actually in the belt of Saturn called Iapetus. It's actually explained in Robert Morningsky's The Hidden History of Planet Earth.
Right.
He actually describes the war from the Sumerians' point of view. even though he's an Arapaho Hopi Indian in America.
Yeah.
And he describes Enki, how the war began, what happened, all the Death Stars that were used, where it ended up, what it did to Uranus. And you're thinking to yourself, well, all the planets have all been disturbed. They've all been perturbed off their axes, and Uranus is literally flipped onto its side.
Yes.
But this story explains it. Before we had all of this Sumerian information from Zechariah Sitchin and whoever. Yeah. Because this was in the 1960s. How the hell do you know this?
What book is that?
The Hidden History of Planet Earth. I'll find the link and pass it over to you.
Okay.
But it's an interesting read because a lot of it makes sense, and there's a lot of things up there in space that you think, well, yeah, these things aren't natural objects because they're hexagonal, you know, or they're armor plated, or there's some weird anomalies with them that just don't make sense. And the planets were definitely rearranged differently in ancient times because the sky is different.
Yeah.
They're all closer.
There's also science out there that suggests Saturn and Uranus might have been suns at one time, and they're blue dwarf suns or something like that.
There was a funny thing I noticed there. There was three Stargate episodes, and they were all dates of the year. One was 1969, second one was 2001, and the third one was 2010.
Yeah.
And what it was basically linked around solar storms or solar coronal mass ejections, time traveling, and the idea that a race comes here to give us a cure, gives us a vaccine.
A vaccine, huh?
Yeah, and it gives you pretty much immortality, but the side effect has a nasty effect, and it's basically world sterility. And it keeps time traveling from these three themes, from time traveling back to 1969, solar storms and time travel, and this idea that you meet this race that comes giving you all of these things, but the side effect is it wipes your entire species out within 100 years, just by depopulation, by sterility.
Yeah.
Brilliant little series, but it gives you loads of little clues of... this trade that they do.
Sure.
No, bio-specific genetic weapons that just go specifically for a certain gene.
You mean like AIDS?
Things like that, like Ebola, you know, anything like that. Yeah. But it gives you two perspectives of when it's happened and when they realize what they've done. Each episode plays around with, well, everything's good, everything's great. Look, they've got miles of technology. They're completely, I'm out of my field. You know, I don't even understand what they're saying to me, but they're that advanced. But then she susses out the... She asks him a certain question. She says, how did you work out how to ignite a star? In other words, there was a thing called the Lucifer Project. Remember where they tried to ignite Jupiter?
Yes, yes.
And make a second sun?
Yes.
Well, this is in Stargate, talking about meeting this race called the Ashen. And they were so impressed. They were like, well, how did you ignite a sun as a fuel source? And it's called the Jupiter Project in that series. So I'm like, well, why is that there? Why is that there? And talking about this New Age Galactic Federation of Light, the new Messiah.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever's going to come down, the Pleiadians or whoever. But in Stargate, it's the Ashen, and they come down very human, very normal, like everything's groovy, but the depopulation is there. So the theme's already there in these TV series. No matter what you watch,
yep,
they're always there, that sub-theme. We come in peace, and then flip it. In other words, we come to kill you.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to set up a healthcare that's going to treat everyone. You know, completely put that in a mirror and reverse it.
Yeah, that's the David Icke. That's a David Icke thing, that all the world's governments are being run by this reptilian presence or something. This reptilian
doesn't need to be reptilian for me.
Yeah,
doesn't. I mean, if you think about reptilian being a psychopathic mind. And another species that we don't quite understand or even realize is here, then I'm quite open to the idea, well, okay, it's an R-type, you know, it's a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Call it reptilian if you wish, but it's still the same to me. I don't have to spend, you know, hours trying to expand my mind, trying to fit it in and think, oh, shape-shifting reptilians. Well, not really, no. A psychopath does the same thing. It changes and morphs into whatever it wants.
Yes, it
could be happy one minute.
That's right.
Be your best friend the next.
That's right.
That's a shapeshifter.
And you don't even have to morph.
You don't have to morph. You just acquire and mimic.
Yep.
Yeah. Imitate. That's what it does. That's what governments are. They're all imitations of what was natural. You know, the cloned versions of something. We've been, what's the word? Invasion of the body snatchers. It's been body snatched. We think it's the real thing.
Sure. Exactly.
That not my wife.
Well, you know what just gets me, Lee, is how many years and years and years of this abuse are people going to be able to take? And by the looks of over... All around the world, really. It's not going to last much longer, tell you the truth. I had this thought, and it made sense to another guy, another friend of mine. I was talking to on Skype the other day. All of these FEMA camps that they have over here,
yeah,
allegedly like 800 of them.
The relocation happy sensors.
Relocation, yeah. Well, I don't think that they're for the people. I don't think they're there for the masses of people. I think they're being built for them to protect them from us. They're going to be on the inside of them things. They're stocked with food. These FEMA camps are stocked with food. These bunkers that don't exist, they're also stocked with food. You know, you tell somebody about a bunker and they just laugh at you like you've got a third eye right in the middle of your head.
Mm-hmm.
I've got this sneaky feeling that these FEMA camps aren't for us. They're for them.
To be honest, I don't think it really matters because the way I look at it, history's been telling us something happens, you know, periodically through history. And when the sun decides to do what it wants to do, the ultraviolet light goes all the way through those buildings anyway.
Yeah.
So
well, that won't be in our lifetime anyways, but
we hope not.
Yeah.
But the UV light is magnifying to a higher level, so it's getting a bit more dangerous.
Yeah.
The light.
Yeah.
But you've got to adapt to it. That's the thing.
Yes, you do.
But I associate the sun with vision. I mean, when we talk about we've only got 3% perspective of what we can see, all the rest is invisible in higher frequencies. Well, if the sun decides to magnify itself and maybe allow us to see into the ultraviolet and the infrared, just imagine what the populace would do when they start seeing things really do exist on a certain frequency. If your eyes accepted it and your brain kind of decoded it, shall we say?
Yeah.
If the sun was in a perpetual state of being in a more enlightened state, do you think the people would adapt to it, or do you think they would burn?
What do you think? What do you think about the Saturn moon matrix theory?
I know from my own history stuff that Saturn had another moon. And that's where Charon is now, Pluto.
Okay.
So I don't really know what the moon has to do with Saturn. I don't know, how he's making that connection.
Well, that theory goes Saturn is a transmitter of some sort of a signal to the Earth, and the moon is the transceiver, and then it also relays it back to Earth. And allegedly that signal is keeping our brains from seeing the full 100% or using the full 100% potential of its use. Keeping it down to 8 or 9%, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And who's to say that we can't see all these other interdimensional beings that are allegedly doing things to us?
If we're locked into the rainbow, I mean, again, I'm using a bit of symbolism here for a reason. Have you noticed the symbol of the rainbow is used in certain ways?
Yes.
Especially in the spiritual practices as well. Well, think of it this way. Your eyes are locked into that rainbow. It's an old biblical precept, isn't it? You know, I set my sign in the sky as a bond between me and the earth. I set my rainbow in the sky as a covenant.
Right.
Well, that anchors you to the sun. So theoretically, the Lord of Light, for all of us naturalists or us, you know, those bound to the soil of Earth, well, that's all that matters, isn't it? That's your rainbow. But can you escape the rainbow? What other light spectrums are in there if the sun wasn't there? What light would you then be having to get adjusted to? Which is why I like the Saturn connection. Because they're saying that, have you ever noticed in Egypt that all of these moon, all of the discs between the horns are always red? All of the Egyptian motifs, they've always got Hathor with a red disc.
Okay.
Which, what's red? Is it the moon? Is it Mars? Or is that the sun being very far away?
Right.
And the closer we get to the sun goes from red to orange to white, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes, it does.
Because that sun's definitely gone brighter since I was a child. It used to be yellowish, but now it's blindingly white.
Well, I think that could be from the atmosphere too, though, Lee. Yeah. They've pumped so many chemicals and stuff into the atmosphere. So many particles are up in there now from the chemtrails that the oxygen levels are actually down right now. So who's to say what the sun actually looks like unless you're up in the upper reaches of the atmosphere. But I think I'll go ahead and take a quick break here now. I need a little nature break, please.
Okay, mate. Yep, no problem.
All right. I'll pop a quick song on here, and we'll be right back in a few minutes, everyone. And welcome back, everyone. About 29 minutes left of my show here. Wednesday night's, it'd be the 20th of August, 2014, allegedly, for the NSA records there, everyone. I still have Lee uniquely with me. I thought, what are the kind of, are we going to go in a different direction, or are we going to continue on with that, Lee?
I'm open to go anywhere, really. Where would you like to take this?
Well,
where can you take it?
You know, I've got this chance to do something out of my norm. I'm talking to someone, and I might be getting into some paranormal stuff. I'm not sure. Might not, it's probably not going to be on this network here because that's not really a solution. But you know, anyway. So I think maybe just to make some money as kind of a side job in that. But anyways, I'll discuss that more when I get some more information and get something more solid. Anyways, but I don't really rule anything out, Lee, because we've been lied to from day one back 6,000 years ago.
Yeah.
I keep telling everyone, show after show after show, how many times do we have to be lied to? Is it 1, 2, 35, 150, 10,000? How many times do we have to be lied to?
Well, here's the way I see it. When you think of how people are so closed off, if their fella or if a woman has a chap or a man has a woman, and they're looking through their smartphones or they're going through the Facebooks and they realize there's something's going on between, you know, the two parties, and then generally speaking, there's a little bit of a kerfuffle. You lied to me, she lied to you, blah, blah, blah. But yet you have a horrendous lie every day on the media and no one cares.
Media just and government.
He's bonking her, or she's screwing this guy, or because they're watching Big Brother and they're watching all of these TV shows, that's normal behavior for people. And
X
while they're
factor,
all whinging to each other about who's bonking who, the government's going, keep going.
Keep
just
going.
Don't watch.
Keep
don't
up the look. Distractions. Yep.
Yeah. Don't look.
Turn that TV on.
It'll soon all be over.
Yes.
Yeah. Keep
yes.
doing what you're doing.
Turn the TV on. Watch some more. Here's some more useless crap. 785 channels of useless crap. Just keep watching it, everyone.
The good thing about people's internet radio as well, especially you, Steve, you've got like a nice radio voice.
Who's
sometimes
that?
I think to myself, we are so much better than a ranty,
a
ranty guy.
Yeah.
You know, okay, we know the world's a bit buggered, but we don't need to shout down the microphone to tell you.
Yeah, or we don't need a bullhorn.
No. All we really require is an ear and a capable mind of critical thinking.
You know, that's his little shtick. As far as I'm concerned, he was just put in place to whip up the American people. Whip them up into a frenzy because they did much too good of a job back 100 years ago with the advent of Hollywood and radio and then television.
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of explored that yesterday on my show, the idea that the media and the way the infrastructure is set up now, they're just making associations for you to accept.
Right.
You know, love is money. So, you know, love equals money. I'm like, well, who made that association for me?
Yes.
Why am I seeing that everywhere?
Exactly.
<You know. Yeah.
laughs> I'd like to give me them sunglasses out of the
they
movie
live.
They Live.
Yeah.
Just to see what the billboards actually say.
Do you know what? I think it's more of a powerful symbol than the anonymous flag. If everyone started just wearing the sunglasses and t-shirts with They Live.
They Live, yeah.
Just a visual cue for people to, you know, maybe go and investigate what that film's about.
Yeah, well, they would ask the wearer, the man or woman wearing the t-shirt, what it means, if they don't know what it means, you know, and then they can get a little explanation.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking of ideas where we can just hijack a meme and incorporate people's internet radio into it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm just trying to think of clever ways to do that, just to hijack.
Well, have the picture of Roddy Piper and his and his buddy with the glasses on, looking at a billboard that says PIR on it, maybe.
Yeah, sovereignty.
So yeah,
contracts.
Seek sovereign solutions.
Yeah.
That'd be a good T-shirt, wouldn't it?
RTS.
Yeah, RTS. There you go.
Well, again, if someone can like screen capture that and maybe play around with it in Photoshop or GIMP, maybe we could do something funny with it. You know, like what's his name was talking about, Ben Gilroy. Things like that would be great for his show because the visual cues of doing little parodies like that and getting people to look.
Sure, they would. Yeah. I'll make up a little one tonight. I'm getting a little bit better with Photoshop, and I'll make something up. Yeah.
even just screen captures from major films where you think, okay, sure, the subject matter is of this. How can we spin it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So many ideas you could play with of just turning all this, inverting it back to, you know, back to what's back in our court, shall we say.
Yeah. Well, you know, to expand a little bit on a subject that we haven't touched upon tonight, but I was talking to Vin the other night, and he said there's just an easy solution for that riots down there in Ferguson, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
He just said somebody march into the, well, not really march in, but go into the sheriff's office and tell the sheriff that they accept his oath of office, or they accept his oath. And he should be, Vin said that the sheriff should know what that means and he should stop what he's doing. But I don't know. I would have to see some proof of that myself. I would have to go to my own local sheriff. And he seems to be a nice guy and we don't have any problems around here. But I'd have to try that out myself, you know.
Well, I know in England,
Americans over here are stupid. I don't even think 90% of them even have heard of the word sovereign or contract law or anything.
No. I know we've got a sheriff in Brighton, but it's more of a ceremonial office now. He doesn't really have any effectual power, which is odd because most of the courts still go through the sheriff as writs.
Well, he still has the power then.
So it's just strange that they lie on the website.
Well, yeah, they're just lying on the website. Yeah. It's not a ceremonial power. Well, yeah, don't they also claim that the queen is just a ceremonial
mascot? Trade mascot.
And she has no power anymore?
Mm.
Don't they claim that?
Well, the funny thing is with the sheriff's office, when I looked into the court system over this way, it's actually created through the court system. As soon as the courts were created in Parliament, that's when the sheriff's office was popped along at the same time, because he had to have a certain share of wealth to hold that office.
Right.
For him to basically affect court cases, because if it went wrong, he had to pay out of his pocket, so he had to have an estate. But that comes out of the 16th century.
Sure.
So when they say this is just ceremonial, it's like, well, why is he directly linked to the court?
Yeah.
Is that legislation birthed his office? Obviously, there was in the 13th century, they were called constables or, you know, a different thing. But in the 16th century, it became more commercialized.
I thought they were called Shire of the Reefs, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But it was only when the Municipal Corporations Act actually employed the police as a service that they subscribed to. So it became a private security force for the City of London Police as a metropolis.
Yep.
And then it's morphed and developed into what is a horrible... Well, it's a private force of a private company.
Private thugs.
Effectively.
Private thugs, yep. Yeah. That's all they are.
And they surround the fortress. You know, the City of London was known to be called the Fortress because it's a walled city. It's an old Roman walled city.
Right.
Hence, it's City of London. But they've had the rights to be a free taxable entity since the 13th century.
The City of London has been?
Yeah. Well, there's three of them on the planet. There's Vatican City, which is an independent, and then there's Washington, D.C.
Yes.
So they're your three pinnacles of power.
Yeah.
All tax-exempt havens, basically.
Yep, exactly.
But as you say, most Americans don't get that either.
Well,
but not that many English people get that. You know, you tell them, you know, what's the United Kingdom? They go, oh, it's the government. But of course it is.
Yeah. But, you know, people have this mentality that if they don't see it on the TV, it isn't really real.
Yeah.
They give more power and more authority, if you want to call it that, to the television than what they will to somebody talking to them face to face.
Yeah. The communication is not there in an age of communications, I find.
It's
kind of a paradox, isn't it?
You see, it was absolutely diabolical, and they probably knew it from the beginning with testing on people, what the television can actually do psychologically to someone, along with the flicker rates and putting you in a seance trance almost like, and being able to implant psychological thoughts into your head and have them virtually become truth to you.
Yeah.
I can imagine that they researched this probably from day one and knew what they were going to do and knew how they were going to do it. And as someone said, one of the Illuminati white papers said that they were going to create a technocratic tyranny, I think it was, or something like that, a technocratic new world order. You know, they were gonna take us over technologically.
Well, it's very
and they have taken us over technologically too.
Well, it's just a Planetary Hotel California, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Turn the telly on. You can check in, but you can't check out. Yep.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Got the pink champagne on ice.
Yes.
And we know what that means in a coded language, don't we?
I have forgotten. I've heard about it many, many years ago, but I forgot about it.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, it's the sniffy stuff, isn't it?
Pink champagne?
Yeah.
Cocaine?
Pink champagne on it. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it. So that's the kind of den of iniquity the Hotel California is going to be when we all book in.
Yeah. All gonna be
they
like
stab you with their steely knives, you know.
Yeah,
lovely.
All gonna be like 1984. Everybody standing up and shout at the newsreel when the news comes over the big screen.
See, as one way of looking at things in my weird little world is, I see United States and the United Kingdom both are having two different laboratory experiments performed on them in social engineering.
Certainly.
You're having the 1984 model with a bit of the Brave New World model thrown on top. Whereas we've just got the Brave New World model. We're completely under a scientific dictatorship because we're all mind controlled.
Yeah.
The media's got us, has us completely entranced. And when you look at the news or the TV or the shows that are on and you listen to the adverts, everyone's being childified. It's like walking into a 5-year-old's bedroom half the time.
It is.
And when you talk to them, it's like speaking to a 12-year-old. You know, yeah. They're all giddy and childish. And you're like, but you're a grown woman. What's going
right.
on?
Right. And then you get into the argument of the idiocracy.
You're just a hater.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what's worrying for me is when I hear adverts, if I don't have to watch them, but if I turn my head away and listen to them, it's the software that, well, hello, children. All you got to do is ring up and get insurance. 1, 2, 3.
Well, that's social engineering right there, too.
And all doing it, all of them. And that's not mind control.
Because
I want to know what isn't.
Well, because you're not smart enough to do the right thing, so you have to listen to us tell you what to do.
Yes, let us make some associations for you that you didn't hold before.
Yes. You know, I keep saying it over and over again. Things started changing back in the 70s and 80s. Especially in the mid to late 80s, they started calling the police over here. They started calling them authorities. Mm. That's also a psychological imprint.
Yeah.
They're trying to rewrite history. I think that was the time that many, many people knew that the police really didn't have power over the people. And then things started to change. And, now that I think about it, you know, Lee, I think from day one, people knew that they didn't have power over the, people knew that the police didn't have power over them. And that's why they got beat up so often in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, over here, we got a term called the beat cop. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's where that term come from. Some big goon was just told to go out and beat people up. And if they didn't acquiesce to what the city wanted them to do or the corporation wanted them to do.
Yeah.
And I believe that's where the term beat cop came from.
Well, coppers was supposed to do with the...
coppers, yes.
The copper that they wore, wasn't it?
Well, they had a copper badge.
Copper badge, that's the one, yes. Yeah. And then we've got peelers, you know, when you say keep your eyes peeled.
Peeled, yeah.
That comes from the peelers or Robert Peel when he invented the police service for the City of London.
Okay.
But yeah, as we've seen over time, it's been privatized, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It used to be a social contract, really. You know, if you needed their services, it was a subscription, I suppose.
Yes.
You pay for a yearly service to be serviced, as most of them do. But what you've got now is you've got them all getting sponsored by Wonga and all of these nefarious companies. And you're like, well, if you're working for profit as a private organization, they're not serving the public anymore. They've become something else. Again, they've been body snatched.
Yeah.
They look it. They sound the same, but they're just not.
Yep.
And people don't accept that. It's like they're all working for profit. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They're there to serve and protect, as in serve you and protect themselves.
That's right. Serve you and protect themselves. That's right. That's about the extent of it. Whatever the corporation wants, protect it at all costs.
Yeah. And you also see the slight change where it used to be an old constable under his old oath recognized the Elizabeth and the sovereign.
There he goes.
People and all those kind of things. in the new oath that they took when the Police Reform Act came in a couple of years ago, they changed it.
Yeah.
They placed in a United Nations provision which protected your human rights. I'm like, well, you've just changed again. Again, yeah. You've gone into a different jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Because they're going to serve you human rights, of course. They won't put those ties on too tight.
Right.
They may not punch him in the face, but you'll get your human rights, of course. Yeah.
4K and Mahatma got two real good responses in there. Constable on patrol is a cop. Beat cop. Pinkerton boys in the USA. Yep, the Pinkertons. They were the first. They were the first beat cops. But the Pinkertons eventually turned into the Secret Service. So there's a really trustworthy entity there. And the Alan Pinkerton was a master mason. He was high in masonry. And he evidently started. He eventually started the company that would turn into the Secret Service. And look how many presidents they saved. Yeah, they got rid of Garfield, and they got rid of Kennedy, and they got rid of Lincoln. Since he started that company, they took three of them out.
Yeah. Something happened in England as well. There used to be a thing called the Civil Defense Act in about 1967 in the 70s.
Right.
2004, they changed it to what's called the Civil Contingencies Act. And it's exactly the same as the Continuity of Government Act
in America.
What that provision does in that thing, as we get in towards the end of your show, the Civil Contingencies Act basically is perfect for the conditions we're going to go through if Ebola goes crazy. All of the conditions are there for that to go conditional. Do you know what I mean? It will meet the criteria because the United Nations has declared this now an emergency problem. There's activators in these legislations which says if these conditions are met, the martial law effects of them all kick in.
Right.
Because you're going to start disrupting business. Continuity of government must continue. Even if we have a plague pandemic, business needs to carry on.
Yeah.
That's what it's all designed for, to keep the money coming in.
It certainly is.
So at the moment, I keep saying to people, look at this continuity of government in America. Look at the Civil Contingencies Act and just tell me if they're not similar.
Yep, exactly.
And see what will activate one of these things should anything happen, because the qualifications are things like, air traffic problems, monetary flow.
Communications,
you know, banking emergencies, EMP pulses.
Healthcare.
You know, anything like that will trigger it. So keep your eyes on that one.
Oh, yes.
Because we're mirroring each other, you and I.
Oh, yes.
In America and Camp England, we are both following down the same path. The left and the right hand are shaking each other's hands.
Camp England, huh?
I call it Camp UK. I've called it Camp UK since I was on MySpace years ago. And I call my friends in America, you know, Camp US. Because we're both in Camp, we're both captives. We're under the law of nations.
Absolutely.
Legally speaking.
Legally or lawfully, yeah.
Legally speaking. I mean, we're on the island together, but we just think we're in a prison camp. But the way they've got us all conditioned, we are basically mental patients in a lunatic asylum. In an open prison, and when you're naughty, you're back into the cell.
Yep. Absolutely.
So you've got freedom to access the gardens and the lunatic asylum and drive around the hospital. But eventually, the system will make you a nervous wreck, and off to the pub you go.
Yep, absolutely.
Look in the word ward. If you've got a ward counsellor, you only ever find wards in two places.
Yeah.
Hospitals and lunatic asylums. So if you're a ward of the court or a ward of the state or a ward of the councillor ward, think about what your position is there.
And
what's the relationship? Yeah.
A mental institution is one of them, places that has a ward.
Yeah. Yeah. Black's Law, I mean, it does say ward is very specific about that. And if they're talking legalese, then okay, I agree with your interpretation. I am a lunatic.
Yeah.
In a prison, you know. Okay, fair enough. Doesn't make it so, but.
Come set me free. ASAP, right?
Yeah. But that's the crazy belief system. And that's why the world's going nuts, because they have strange belief systems that they all believe in. Doesn't matter whether we don't believe it, but they really do believe it. You know, there's lots of them involved.
Yes, they do.
They're very powerful.
Well,
so.
You know, that also gets into another argument that it doesn't matter whether you believe in the Bible or not, or believe in God.
No.
These people do, and they are working on a prophecy out of the Bible.
Well, they're all following a movie script where every single one of them believes their acting role.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, they're all really taking their role seriously in this.
Yeah.
I just don't like the ending of it. The ending's really crap.
They act pompous and they act arrogant.
But it's interesting to throw in three biblical films at us this year. We've just got The Flood and Noah, haven't we? We're about to get Exodus, Kings and Gods.
What was the first movie?
The Flood, Noah.
Oh, right. Noah, yes.
Yeah. And now as the world's kind of running away from Ebola and running away from ISIS and running away from immigration cells everywhere and everyone just wants to go somewhere else, we're going to get Exodus.
Yeah. Well, correct.
Synchronistically.
Yeah. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall Noah's two sons and future daughter-in-law fighting, and his wife for that fact, fighting for him not to kill their grandsons. In the movie. Have you seen the movie yet, Noah?
The movie's terrible.
Oh, it is.
It's really bad.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's the worst film probably I've seen for a very long time.
I can't think of probably much of anything except for the water and building of the ark that's actually anywhat factual from the Bible. Because everything else is just Hollywood.
Well, he certainly wasn't a an angry man wanting to kill his unborn baby. And
well,
you know, if it was a girl, what's all that about?
He also killed some men in the beginning of the movie too, and I don't recall him killing any men. I remember
his God being kind of, you know, ruthless towards children, but I don't remember Noah actually saying, "Well, you know, if it comes out a girl, I'm gonna have to kill it." You know, just like my God would.
Yeah,
I don't remember rock monsters. Where's the rock monsters?
Just like
all
my
about?
God would. Yeah.
Where's the Nephilim? Where's the giants? You know, they must have been there. Why are they all portrayed as rock monsters?
Right.
It's like terrible.
You know. The Watchers. Yeah.
The Watchers. Yeah, they were rock monsters. It's like, well, this is Lord of the Rings territory. This is silly. It doesn't belong there.
That's right.
I was disappointed.
Where did Noah put the woodworms?
So I'm expecting Exodus, Kings and Gods to be equally ludicrous somehow and be biased towards some kind of political entity on the planet right now. You know, because everything's walking towards the end of the show, isn't it? The end of the book.
Yes.
So how do we want this ending to go? Because I'm kind of like Final Destination. You know, we get the alternative endings to the movies where no one really dies and there's a happy ending. Well, that's what I want.
Yeah,
I don't want us to follow the script right to the end and for them to act it out and go, "Hey, bravo, everyone!
Well,
give yourselves a round of applause, give us a standing ovation because
let's invent the sunglasses." That's how it ends.
Get to give them the sunglasses.
Invent the sunglasses.
And on that note, man, I will put my sunglasses on and
I'm
all out of bubblegum.
Bet you would do. Yeah, I'm here to kick butt and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
That should be a slogan we all should be wearing.
Yes.
Anyway, Steve, thanks for having us, man.
Yes.
Enjoyed. It was good fun.
Have a good night. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, man. Cheers.
All right, everyone. Yes, I think. Lee for coming on and salvaging my show. I don't know what happened to my guest. I haven't heard a message from him, so I don't know. I guess I will have to reschedule. But I will be back Friday night, everyone. So take care. I'll put a good song in here. Different song. Here we go. Good night, everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts. This has been People's Internet Radio's Cancel the Cabal.